In the beginning of 2016, I began a systematic collection of family stories. And that's been a wonderful experience for me. And many of you have commented on that because I've used a bunch of them in sermon illustrations. And that's been something that's constantly in my mind. Right now, I've been working on stories that relate to my maternal grandfather. His name was O.A. Brundage, Orpheus Arthur Brundage. The truth is, there was no Arthur in his name at all. He just didn't like the name Orpheus, understandably. And so he stuck a middle name in there, made it up. He wanted to be Arthur and was Art. And so that was the name that he had adopted. Died very young, died in his middle 50s, in the middle 60s. In my family, there was a bunch of Roberts. I had two uncles and two cousins named Robert. And so you can imagine how difficult it was to identify everybody. There was Big Robert and Little Robert, which wasn't good at all. Robbie and Bob's and all kinds of different combinations. My paternal grandfather is named Barclay Menier. And one time I went to my mom and I said, "Why did you name me Robert?" And she said, "Don't look at me. I wanted to call you Orpheus Menier." So it's like, okay, you know, I won't argue with that anymore. As I was working on stuff the other day, I just looked up and said to Terry, my grandfather has been gone 53 years, and yet his legacy is still here, not just in me, but in other members of my family. And I just thought that was incredible that somebody's influence could continue a half a century later. Terry was quick to point out that there are opposites of that as well. There are people who've been gone 50 plus years whose negative and sinful influence continues to this day. And I thought that was a very important point. My grandfather believed in the power of hard work. Hard work was a great thing. I spent all my summers growing up here in Oklahoma. It didn't matter where we lived. About the time school was out, my mom would bring us to the farm. The farm was at Tribby, Oklahoma. I don't know how many of you know where Tribby is, down not too far from Shawnee. And then at the end of summer, near Labor Day, my mom and dad would come and pick us up. We spent the whole summer there. My California cousins would come, and the local cousins were there. It was a wonderful time. My grandfather had horses. And we could ride the horses. People would help us put the saddles on and various kinds of things. But there was one rule. You had to hand water your horse when you brought him back. Now, each horse had a bucket, probably hold about 5 gallons. And we kids would get gallon buckets and go to the well house and put as much water as we could carry in there and pour it in the bucket for the horse. Now, I think my grandfather kicked all the buckets over while we were gone because they always seemed to be totally empty. Horses in the summertime can drink an amazing amount of water. It became a very old process. And it didn't matter how old you were. If you were old enough to ride a horse, you were old enough to carry water. You might have to carry a little bit at a time. It wasn't until later that I realized they were hoses from the well house. We could have used a hose. That wasn't the point. The point was he wanted to teach us a lesson in hard work. So he engineered this situation. As I think about my relationship to my maternal grandfather, we sometimes talk about the fact that you need somebody, a male figure that represents God in your life. And certainly he is that person. And I see God in him in a lot of ways. But as I relate to God, I relate to him through this man that he blessed us to have. This morning, I'd like to look at Isaiah, specifically at chapter 46. Those are the verses that we're going to use this morning. In Isaiah chapter 46, verse 9, it says simply, "Remember the former things, those of long ago. I am God, and there is no other. I am God, and there is none like me." Remember the former things. We look back 50 years ago, and we start to think about what the world was like. And if I tried to interject my grandfather into today's world, that would be impossible. My grandfather believed that your word was your bond. You didn't tell lies. You didn't buy anything that wasn't American. He had these really hard standards that he lived by. And Israel in this writing has wandered away from the standards that God has provided them. And God is saying, you need to turn back to the former things. What's he talking about there? He's talking about things like faith and dependability, being reliable, being steadfast, being willing to stand up for what was right, being willing to follow the commands and follow God fully and completely. And I believe very much that as God looks at the issues that we have today, and especially the things that we don't do well, he would say to us, go back to those former things. Go back to those things that you've left behind. Now, let me make one thing perfectly clear. I get real frustrated by this sometimes because oftentimes when people want to go back to the former things, they go back to the former methods. And there's a difference between the methods and the values. You can't just go back to old methods and expect that those values are going to return. There's nothing holy, there's nothing sacred about methods. It's the values that are there. And as time changes and as culture changes, we have to use the methods that work at a particular point in time. Over the last few months particularly, I have divested myself of more than 80% of my library. And some of the books have actually gone into the dumpster. And there were people who didn't, there were books nobody wanted. They just had to be thrown away. And every time I would let one of those books go, I would think about my grandfather. My grandfather was proud to have graduated from the sixth grade. He was a Bible student. He would work extra places and work overtime in order to buy Bible study books. He had his Bible, but he wanted to have concordances. He wanted to have Bible dictionaries. He wanted to have commentaries. And those things were very, very important to him. That was some of the most valuable things that he possessed. And I know that if he could miraculously walk in here today and you could say, you know, Grandpa, all that stuff's on my cell phone. He would say, first of all, what's a cell phone? My smartphone, I guess is a better way to say it. He wouldn't believe those things that are available today. And yet, he would look at that new method and say, this is better. This is what we need to do. This is the way we need to go. There are old values out there, and those old values are powerful. And we need to keep them, and we need to do everything we can to resurrect them. But we don't have to only use the old methods to attempt to bring back those values. Isaiah 46, as I mentioned, the passage I'd like to focus on particularly is verses 3 and 4. Listen to me, you descendants of Jacob, all the remnant of the people of Israel, you whom I have upheld since your birth and have carried since you were born. We're going to use especially verse 4 as our text today. Even to your old age and gray hairs, I am he. I am he who will sustain you. I have made you and I will carry you. I will sustain you and I will rescue you. As old as we get, as ancient as we become, God is still there and still active in our lives, and he's working in specific ways. And this passage I like so much because it mentions three certain things. He's going to sustain us, he's going to carry us, and he's going to rescue us. At first, when we look at it, is sustain you. How is God sustaining you right now? I would imagine that if I ask you to write that down on a piece of paper, most of your answers would be, I don't fully know. And that probably would be the correct answer. We know some of the ways that God sustains us, but a lot of things God is doing for us, we don't even have any idea. Sometimes the natural world gives us a little bit of an indication. Look at the saline balance in the oceans. The range is so small. Look at the balance between oxygen and carbon dioxide in our world. The range is so small. You look at the DNA differences between people and even near species. The range is so minute. God keeps this incredible world in this total balance. that allows for us to live here. I constantly am reminded when I hear somebody railing against God, especially somebody who's coming from an atheist position. And they may be talking blatantly, and they may be talking very ugly ways about God. And in the back of my mind, it always enters in the idea of, what if God just stopped sustaining them for just a bit? How would their opinion change? How would their life be altered in just that moment? Now, there are ways that we know that God has sustained us. We know there are times when we get to that place where we don't think we can do anymore. We don't think we can carry on. We don't think we can continue. And yet we find within us this God-given strength to move forward. And we recognize that God is sustaining us. It might be in a period of grief. It might be in a period of extreme challenge. It might be in a period of financial collapse. Any number of things you could suggest put us at times where God continues to sustain us. The other thing that he mentions is, I carry you. Let me share with you the first part of that chapter. I don't have it. I didn't put it on the screen. Bel bows down. Nebo stoops low. Their idols are borne by beasts of burden. The images that are carried about are burdensome, a burden for the weary. How do they move their images of their gods? How do they move their gods? They got to load them up on something and drag them around. They stoop and bow down together, unable to rescue the burden. They themselves go off into captivity. He says, look around you. All those idols that you're so attracted to, those things have to be carried around. And then he changes it over and says, but what's our situation? What's the situation between Yahweh and his people? Well, Yahweh carries his people. He carried them out of Egypt. He carried them through the desert. He carried them across Jordan. He carried them through the promised land. He carried them when the Philistines took over. He carried them when the Midianites took over. And over again, God has carried them. And he's reminding them of that. And again, as we use parallels in our own lives, we can see those moments in time when God carries us. Back in the 80s, there was a little Hallmark story, and you can remember it, of the footsteps, all of the terrible things that happened in a person's life. And as that images are shown, perhaps in the sky, I don't remember the story completely. But in the deepest, darkest moments, there's only one set of footprints. And the person says, why was it like that? Where were you? God says, well, I was carrying you during those times. I've told you before about the lady who called the church building. Want to know where that was in the Bible? It's not in the Bible, but it's a great idea. And it's a true idea. And it really is a wonderful analogy to keep in our minds, because there are moments when the only way we can survive is because God carries us and leads us forward. The last thing is, he's going to rescue you. Now, specifically in Isaiah chapter 46... he's talking about the exile that they're about to go into, and that a moment will come when he's going to rescue them. If we would look down at verse, I believe it's verse 11. Yeah. He says, from the east I summon a bird of prey, from a far off land a man to fulfill my purpose. It's Cyrus. Before they go into exile, God says, I have a plan to rescue you. I'm going to take you out of there. And as we look at that parallel, we understand that we are rescued as well. What a joyous situation that is. Probably can't see that well. Picture of Benjamin Netanyahu, the current prime minister of Israel, known to his friends as Bibi. This particular man was a commando, captain of an elite unit, but he has a distinction that probably has more to do, or has a lot to do, let's say it that way, with his political success. In our country, we celebrate 4th of July as Independence Day. In Israel, for the last 41 years, they've celebrated the 4th of July because that was the day of the rescue at Entebbe. You may remember the PLO took over an airplane. They flew it to Uganda. They released the non-Israelis, but kept about 100 people, about 100 Jewish people and the flight crew. And they wanted 40 PLO militants to be released before they would release the Israelis. Well, after some discussion back and forth, the Israelis said, okay, we'll give them to you. We'll fly them to Uganda and we'll fly our people out. And if you remember the story, there was a little surprise. Because there wasn't 40 militants on that airplane. There was 100 commandos. They had an old, or I guess an old, may not have been old there. They had a BMW put in the airplane that they drove off so they could attack the hostage takers. Totally, completely successful is how you would say that particular operation was handled. Loaded those people back up into that airplane and took them back, I believe, to Tel Aviv. It was a wonderful rescue moment. Three of the hostages did lose their lives. They killed all of the hijackers and 45 Ugandan soldiers. As you look at it purely from a geopolitical standpoint, it was a success. One Israeli was lost. Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Netanyahu, Benjamin's older brother. And to this day, that man is lifted high in the nation of Israel. This event was not only a rescue, it was an event that raised Israel's standard in the world dramatically. And his brother benefits, and he will admit that, from the political, or benefits politically from the bravery that his brother showed. This guy gave his life so that 100 plus people could be free. And they celebrate him. Obviously, the parallel is real simple. Jesus gave his life so that we could be rescued. And when God says to Israel, I'm going to rescue you from exile, that's just a foreshadowing of the rescue that Jesus brings in our lives. That's Jonathan Netanyahu. The last part of the story, the last thing I want to share with you today is that what Isaiah is talking about is our trust and our faith and our relying in God. He's also saying, though, that there's going to be some discipline. And if you go to Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 through 11, I don't have time to read all those things. But it tells us there that when God loves us, He disciplines us. He's disciplining Israel by sending them into exile because He wants them to fully be the people that He wants them to be. Now, this morning, I think as we look at where we're going, as we look at where we're headed individually, we want to know that God sustains us. We want to know that God carries us. We want to know that God is rescuing us. But sometimes God has to discipline us to shape us. When we shape ourselves, we get to avoid that discipline process. I started talking about my grandfather. I'll end by talking about my grandfather. My grandfather was a strong disciplinarian. Now, he never lifted a hand to any of the grandchildren. But his approval was so powerful that you didn't want to disappoint him. He also believed very much in negative consequences. I can remember a time when my younger brother, probably 4 years old or so, was running down the yard toward a barbed wire fence. And my mother was like, oh, he's going to run into the fence. He's going to run into the fence. And my grandfather said, he won't do it but once. He believed that life would shape us. That when we bring into, when we got out of bounds, we would find consequences that would drive us back within the boundaries. And that's really very true. We look at our world and we see a world that's out of bounds. If we get back in the boundaries, things would be so much better. And the way we do that is we look at those former things, those values that have real strength and real reliability in our lives. God provides them for us. And this morning, if you don't have them in your life, we'd invite you to change whatever you need to change, to take that step. If we can help you do something in a public way, we'd be glad to. If it's something you need to do privately, we encourage you to do that as well. I ask you to stand as we sing this song of encouragement together.